Okay, welcome back to episode 175. Joe, how are you doing?
Tim, I'm fired up. I mean, the coming week has my two favorite horror-based events. We have Halloween and the presidential election. So
that's right.
It's really going to be, like something to behold.
Any predictions?
I predict that chaos will ensue, and I think the election will be contested the next day. Neither will concede, and this will kick off the darkest winter for America. I give this, of all the different theories, I would give this at least a 5 to 10% chance. Nothing is clear enough to, really say, oh, this is a base case where, it's 70-80%. It's so chaotic at this point. But I think it's a reasonable chance. I mean, I don't know if you've been catching all of the different people using the expression dark winter.
Yeah, Biden did that.
Yeah, he did it during the base, but he was just one of a whole.
And that was an operation, I guess, some sort of one of these.
It had been. Yeah, it was actually
an exercise.
It was part of
was it bioterror or something?
Yeah, GLADx. The guy who was running GLADx had an interview, I think, and he used the expression like three times or something. And he was talking about the theoretical event of a pandemic based on smallpox.
Mm-hmm.
But then this expression has crept in the last month, and quite a few people have used it. And Biden, mentioned it during the debate. So I think. One way of looking at this is that this is the prefiguring of something that they know is going to happen. I mean, and if this is the case, then you can see the two parts of it are transparent. You're going to have an election where neither side concedes, leading to race war, and you'll also have the third or fifth wave of coronavirus breaking over. The United States with millions of cases everywhere. And then in the chaos, then you'll have martial law. So that's kind of the worst thing I can imagine, but I'm afraid it isn't out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it is strange because the rhetoric regarding COVID-19 in the cases, you see the headlines that surging cases, hot zones, spikes, cases are just positive tests, or at least reported positive tests. Of a test which is, acknowledged as being completely unreliable, but it's enough for the press to go on it. And it was supposed to be fearful. We have various governors. Our governor here was talking about the cases and their meeting to respond to it as if there's something out there. And you just walk out and you don't see people dropping dead everywhere, or even being sick for that matter. and their political rhetoric and the headlines of the news, the mainstream press, is completely divorced from reality. And it got to the point where it's just that distinct. And you really are watching some sort of pageant or operation or show.
Yeah, and it's maddening that it's so obvious at this point. I don't know if you followed France for the last month and then the events of the last few days. The cases have become just catastrophic. They're literally 10 times higher now than they were in March. So you've had this enormous bulge in cases, which of course is also associated with a huge increase in testing.
Mm-hmm.
But the death rates or the deaths as a result of COVID have plummeted so that there's been a tiny bump, but it is one-tenth the amount that existed in the first phase. Like, in other words, there was like up to like 1,500 people a day dying. Now I think you might have like 100 people. So it's just this tiny fraction, even though the case number is just catastrophic. But this combination shows that, it shows the data is like nonsensical, and it certainly shows that there's nothing to be afraid of, because when you have this tiny mortality rate in France, you know there, just as everywhere else, this is just the ancient who had comorbidities. Healthy people are not dying. It's just an illusion. Everyone knows this. And yet, Marcone, he said he had to do a hard break on COVID by, restructuring the really draconian lockdown stuff. And it was sad to see the videos of the jackboot thugs of dictatorship marching through the streets of Paris, shutting down the cafes. Really sad things to
Yeah,
watch.
the Germans didn't even do that in 1940.
Yeah, they were liberal. But if you look at the jackbooted thugs of dictatorship, they have on the classic uniform, which now is visible everywhere throughout the world. They wear black,
Yes.
they have a bubble helmet on, and then they have every possible weapon to injure the people with. They've got tasers and handguns and submachine guns and bazookas. I mean, it's just a whole armory that they're carrying around with them. And they're always in groups. They're never like just one person. I mean, I remember I lived in Paris for a while when I was younger, and I mean, I can remember the gendarmes. They would be like, Inspector Clouseau basically would be kind of a model. They would have capes on, and they were really harmless and sweet sort of people, just there to keep order. But then to see this, where you've got the jackbooted thugs of dictatorship in their black outfits with all their weaponry. And they would come in, and what the video I saw, and they were this guy was following them as they were just walking down the street, and they would just go and roust every single street cafe. Just, they would come up, 20 of them, and they would just yank these people out. They couldn't even finish their beers, and they had to just push them out into the street, close the place down. So this is clearly, dictatorship. I mean, the idea that this is being done for COVID should be clear to the French people now. They can just look at the numbers and see there's nothing about the virus that could justify this. So the question is how to respond to the thugs of dictatorship. And the people in the cafes were just completely unprepared. They didn't have any. I mean, first of all, they were just sitting there trying to have a cafe or a beer. Going forward, you can see these guys aren't going to leave. I mean, the lockdowns aren't going to stop.
No, it's not. It's the
They're
it's
not going to stop. So the people, if they want to have their life back, are literally going to have to go block by block. And the dictator is weak in the sense that the really vicious thugs are highly technological and highly weaponized, but there are not that many of them. And I've been in contact with people in France, and I've been saying, look, if you want an inspiration, look at the resistance during World War II. Look at how they did it. Study those techniques, because that's a kind of asymmetrical response. You can't have demonstrations carrying John Lennon posters and singing "Give Peace a Chance." I mean, that's not going to get anything done. You just have to assume that you have been occupied, that the thugs of dictatorship are illegitimate, obviously, and you should use any means at your disposal. You have any means at your disposal in terms of how you can respond to these guys, and look at what they did with the first resistance. In fact, I was telling the people I was, talking to, I was saying, look, you start calling yourself the resistance, because that will bring back the memory of how a group of French people responded to the first wave of occupation.
Yeah, you had all these protests. You had these huge protests in the late summer in Germany, in August and September, and then there's Merkel introducing a new phase or new rollout of lockdowns, supposedly in response to, again, to the pandemic, which is just, again, more cases. So they switched to cases over the summertime because they simply weren't getting the deaths to horrify people with a fatality rate that was anyway noticeable or genuine. So they, now it's cases. And of course, the more you test, the more positive results you're going to get. So you have more cases you can get if you're testing more. But well, yeah, but how many people are symptomatic or sick or actually, going to the hospital? That's the question. And, in France right now, you're probably more likely to get beheaded going to church than to die from the coronavirus. So, again, it's not a question, even if you're protesting out in the streets, because you're not going to appeal to, they're not doing this with any regard to the public or public opinion. That's what they seem completely immune from that. And they have this almost universal or uniform PR or propaganda operation going on in the media. And so basically every political figure of significance is just speaking from the same script, blathering on about cases and spikes and pandemics and these things, despite the fact that there's really nothing exceptional going on out there. It'd be interesting as we get it later into the fall, into the winter, when people do get ill, what they make of that, because that's just a regular, cold and flu season.
But
Again,
it's not regular temp because the CDC has said that this year they don't have enough time and manpower to count the flu cases. I mean, it's just beyond belief. I sent you that link to it,
yes.
and I said, file this under like how stupid do they think the public is? They're just not going to have flu this year. We're not going to have it. And guess what, Tim? A lot of those cases, like 100%, will end up as COVID, and
And it's telling that despite that, that's a kind of a it's a blaring question. Why come no, it's not being debated, in Congress, or you don't have any political figures. But you would think, at least one of the two major parties would use it as an issue, and it's not. I mean, you could say Trump dog whistles and says something sometimes, and he's lambasting the press for not taking this thing seriously. The problem is he was either part of it or buffaloed by it or fooled by it early on, so his rhetoric is all over the place. It's schizophrenic. There's no coherence to it. He'll talk about it's not that big deal, then talks about warp speed, vaccination program, and just either it's a serious thing or it isn't. But then his opposition is just either insane or hell bent on promoting this tyranny. So the voter is stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea on this thing, as we usually are.
Yes, as we always are.
I mean,
Yep.
I think at this point I can see someone desperate voting for Trump. I can see that. I'm not going to say no, because with Trump you do have Scott Atlas, and there's at least rhetorically there's some opposition to this, and there's a chance you can get through, where there's not a chance with Biden, who's I think solely in the camp of the oligarchs on this one. So it's a hard, I mean, I don't know, it's one of these things.
It's tough. I mean, democracy is completely broken. It has been for 200 years. The Masonic technique of getting both sides under control and then pretending like there's some kind of struggle going on—they just fool us with this time and time again. Like last week we talked about they had yet another laptop with all this kind of demonic stuff with Biden, and this was going to be a big deal. But somehow it never quite comes out. It's just like the laptop that Hillary had, in the prior presidential election. And so these things just always are kind of dragged in front of us to create the impression that the election means something. This election means nothing. The only thing that's meaningful is whether or not it's actually placid. It's so hard. This is really going to be an interesting week. I am actually finally, this is the first time I've been like interested in a presidential race since Nixon Kennedy. Because then I was a Catholic at that time and I had somebody I could root for, So this is not interesting because you can root for somebody, but just interesting to see if it's going to be, really the dramatic onset of the darkest winter. I mean, that would be tragic to think about, but it's really possible. We'll know, Wednesday when we wake up, if neither has conceded, I think you're going to start seeing riots almost immediately.
So I'll go officially predicting there'll be a clear Trump victory. It's not based on anything. I'm just throwing that prediction out there. So if I'm right, I can say, hey, I'm right.
Well, it's actually not, it's not a bad way to bet, because I think the polls are nonsense. And I also think that there's a strong, what's called shy voter phenomena, where when the pollster comes up, and this individual is usually, a left-wing zealot type, and I mean, looking, looks, I mean, I would just imagine a lot of these people aren't. And so when they ask like a middle-class couple in their 50s who are going to vote for it, they just are a little shocked. They don't want to say Trump. But honestly, I really don't think that any like legitimate like white middle class person can actually vote for Biden. I mean,
Don't say
it'd be like voting for the crazy lady in Portland who
Yes.
proudly proclaims herself, I am Antifa.
Yeah, I
I
mean,
mean,
you probably have
Biden
about.
is just, he's not only senile, but he's really, I mean, the idea of his presidential concepts are also weird and obviously directed against the white middle class. I mean, he says he's going to like create citizens out of 20 million people trying to get on board. He's going to try to ramrod in a couple extra states. So he's just, but I just don't see him legitimate. I don't think he believes any of the stuff he parrots. I think he just is trying to set himself up as a,
What gets me is look at the political class. They never retire.
No.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi's 80 years old or close to it, I think.
They
79,
don't
I think.
die,
I mean, Biden, I was like, do they ever just like retire and step aside, let new blood get in there? And there's not, I mean, it's like,
No.
I mean,
Yeah, when new blood comes along, they drink it.
So it's, well, anyway, this week we talk about fear because a lot of this is based on fear. But anyway, we have Dr. Fauci, who's always willing to talk to the press. Very, I think his name in Italian means jaw or something, right? So
Yeah.
he's running his jaw. He was jaw jawing about this stuff. Dr. Fauci says small gatherings driving cold COVID outbreaks. Worries about Thanksgiving. He's warning people not to about Thanksgiving. Small indoor gatherings of families and friends are driving coronavirus outbreaks across the country. Mind you, these outbreaks are again positive tests. People aren't dropping dead. They're not sick. He conflates infection with exposure, which are two different things. Real, I mean, for a scientist, he's really messy with his language. It has him worrying about the implications for Thanksgiving. Dr. Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, said Wednesday, "You don't want to be the Grinch that stole holidays," Fauci, who is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said in a live stream interview with Dr. Howard Bauchner, editor of the Journal of American Journal of the American Medical Association. But as families plan for coming festivities, they need to consider the risk of gathering. So you don't want people getting together and talking and meeting with families and friends. Coronavirus cases in the United States have reached new highs in the recent days, with daily cases averaging 70,000. Yes, there we go. There were other testing. Yes, these people are not sick. The new surge doesn't bode well for the upcoming holiday season. We are going into a precarious situation, Fauci said. Cold weather is forcing people indoors. Cases are going up in all age groups, and holidays are likely to bring people together in groups, a combination he called a bad recipe for a tough time ahead. A dark winter indeed, right? So, I mean, this is coming off when we were told that people shouldn't go outside. They should stay isolated, stay in place, shelter in place, not go outside. Now that's bad, right? Am I wrong for pointing out
No.
that contradiction? I mean,
It
right? Didn't
seems
they remember last spring? Oh no, don't go outside. Parks are closed. You had cops chasing people out of parks. They had playgrounds taped off with police tape. This is when people go out and get their vitamin D and they get exposure, develop herd immunity. This is how people cope with the viruses, of which there are trillions. But now he's telling that the very measures that they suggested last spring to deal with the virus are apparently going to be the cause of the problem now.
Yeah, I mean it's just ridiculous. These statements come out of hot air. They mean, what are they related to? What science is he actually citing? There's just no studies that could back any of this stuff. I mean, the positions are contradictory, and they are just tweaking us one way or another, depending on the season, to, I think, just to make it incrementally plausible that the virus will never end.
That or
And
just accept that these traditions like Thanksgiving, Christmas, attending regular church services, these things are you just can't do anymore. You can't gather together. You can't meet get in large groupings and celebrate and also assemble and talk about things.
I mean, you can see that the idea is to isolate the individual. I mean, like, how often have we discussed the theme that they want to isolate? Because that they create someone who's easy to control, the more isolated the individual is. So the idea that the virus has produced a medical reason to continue the process that has been going on since the end of World War II is just, it's just sophistry. It's just anyone who looks at the whole panorama can see that this is just the isolation that leads into the technological medical dictatorship.
And of course, Bill de Blasio got in the act, mayor of New York. He's also warning people not to travel out of state for the holidays. He wants like tracking people reporting where they're going, who they met with. You creep, none of your business. He's such a sour face. I'm like, what a poster boy for tyranny. But he want apparently again, it's just too dangerous. And in the meantime, he's making sure that none of those businesses get open up or able to remain profitable in New York City. Again, rising coronavirus cases across the country. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio warned in a briefing Tuesday that the coming season wouldn't be business as usual, urging New Yorkers to avoid traveling to see family and friends for the holidays. He also acknowledged that everyone's going to make their own decision. Oh, that's good of him. And reminded those who travel to get tested and observe the state's quarantine rules. No, they're illegal.
Well,
You don't quarantine the healthy, you moron. This
yeah,
is completely
I mean, all of
contrary.
this, the elephant in the room is that they've got the businesses closed down, and everyone is becoming impoverished. And
No one can
where
afford to
does this
travel
all go?
anyway.
I mean, if the lockdowns continue for what, another 2 years, what will the economic condition be of the American people?
Yes. Across the pond in the UK, UK police chiefs warned COVID ruling. Sorry, UK police chiefs warned COVID rule flouting Christmas parties will be broken up. Merry Christmas, everybody. For top cops in the counties of West Midlands and Merseyside said officers will intervene if they get reports of COVID-19 rule breaking over the festive period. The Daily Mail reported, "If we think there's a large group of people gathering where they shouldn't be, then police will have to intervene." David Jamieson, the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, told the Telegraph, "It's not the police job to stop people from enjoying their Christmas." Oh, really? Sounds like it is.
Sounds like it to
I
me.
mean, however, we are there to enforce the rules that government makes, which is there to prevent people from enjoying Christmas. The West Midlands are currently under the Tier 2 restriction, meaning people can't mix with anyone outside their own household or, quote, bubble, unquote, indoors. Jamieson also warned people against celebrating against large gatherings inside during the upcoming Hanukkah and Diwali celebrations. I guess that's a Muslim celebration. Jane Kennedy, the police and crime commissioner in Merseyside, which is currently a Tier 3 region. Can you imagine that? Trying to follow all that, said she would also probe reports of illegal gatherings over Christmas.
Well, England is moving into the insanity phase. This kind of the same thing that was exp they were experimenting with in Victoria and Melbourne. They have in Wales, they've got this new set of rules that have outlawed selling non-essential products. I don't know if you're following this. It's in department stores, but alcohol is essential. But women's sanitary napkins are not. And so, I mean, and I'm not kidding. They will actually put police tape over these sections of the department stores. So that, and another thing which is not essential is children's clothes. But you can
see these
buy
rules are just made to drive you crazy, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean these are, if you stand back and just think about, well, what might be the science and just try to, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt, there isn't any. It's not even possible to come up with even any sort of rationale. So what you're looking at is slave training. They're incrementally just, you know, putting in place rules which are crazy. But if you accept them, then they can go on to the next phase of the enslavement. So it's that simple. I mean, these things are crazy. It's like in Melbourne, you know, you could go like 5 kilometers from your house, but then they lifted the lockdown and the stores were all closed. But now you could go like 15 or 20 kilometers. Well, good heavens. I mean, you know, what is exactly scientific here? You know, there isn't any. These are just, again, you know, we've talked about so many times that there is slave training that goes on. And think about how to do that. Well, the rules will seem crazy, but after you've been exposed to them for, say, a year, you just automatically assume they exist. You don't even question the basis for them.
Yeah, this is something that was developed, obviously, at like Tavistock or the Rand Corporation.
Yeah.
I mean,
right. And Tavistock did a lot of this stuff back in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of like game theory of how to control population. One of the guys who ended up, his dad, he ended up as the manager of the Grateful Dead, and his father was one of the founders of Tavistock.
Oh, Alan Trist, yeah.
Yeah, and he kind of got into the idea of like, well, how does how to create social cohesion? And a lot of the ideas were, you know, well, you just create rules and then incrementally just get people to get used to them. And that is the process we're in now. They're giving rules that come out of nowhere. There's no rhyme or reason. We're bewildered. We're in a very, you know, kind of discombobulated state. And over time, we will accept them. I mean, remember, it was only, 6 months ago that this was about flattening the curve,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, now you can't buy tampons. But you can buy like a bottle of, you know, cheap Beefeater or cheap gin.
Yeah.
So, you know, we should, you know, and it's like when you were talking about they would have the jackbooted thugs show up and bust up the Christmas parties. Man, if I was in Britain, I would sure be trying to set a few traps and see if you could actually deliver a blow to some of these guys, you know, because this would be a real moment to start getting the resistance, you know, giving it some imagination with some avant-garde, you know, responses. Because I mean, you know, when the jackboot thugs, when the guys show up with the bubble hats and the black outfits with the tasers and the submachine guns to break up a Christmas party because there was only supposed to be 8 and instead there's 12.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, haven't we just gone to the point where, well, gee, we're not really dealing with anything that's legitimate. This isn't, you know, a government that's here to help us. In
yeah,
any way.
I mean, it's obviously someone like Boris Johnson. He's sort of a, I mean, he's looks like he's being held hostage, being forced to do this. He's not in control and he's not making any sense. I heard him giving a speech a few weeks ago describing a situation which is complete fantasy about what we've been through. He's trying to sound Churchillian or something, how you know blood, sweat and tears, and
never
have so many of those, so few. And he's describing a situation which just does not obtain to reality. It doesn't obtain to the situation.
Tim, I mean, look at our presidential debate where Biden was talking about the dinner table with the chair but nobody in it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, no one who was in the chair at Christmas had died. I mean, everyone is in the retirement homes and they're basically close to death anyway. this is a 100% hallucination, and yet he presented it as though we can all just accept the you know, the gravity and the sacrifice that we've all made. I mean, it's you know, just remember the way they handled 911, you know, with you know, all of the accolades for the people who died and everything. And just, you know, the propaganda sweeps over our minds, and then after time, we just incrementally give up the passion and accept what they've done, and then just move another ratchet closer to complete serfdom.
There is, I know I mentioned this off call, I don't know if I mentioned when we were recording, but Donald Trump this week, he just signed an executive order creating Schedule F in the accepted service. He just released an executive order which gives him the power to fire a wide range of bureaucratic federal employees who resist implementing the White House policies. The order would strip bureaucrats of all sorts of, I guess, job protection, civil service protection. Now, some have said this, you know, since taking office, there's been a lot of resistance, so-called deep state, that has opposed Trump. Obviously, the FBI is a great example of this, actually working with the outgoing Obama administration to set up the whole impeachment scam. Now, I don't know exactly what this means. Obviously, there's a lot of power, can be abused, but this would enable Donald Trump to fire Dr. Fauci, which would be nice. You know, cut him off from his $325,000 a year salary, you know, that he's been collecting through this whole time, by the way, as he urged the economy to stay shut down. So,
well, my interpretation of it is that if you have the contested election and then you have large tranches of bureaucrats refusing to accept Donald as president,
he can fire
them. Yeah. Now he'll be able to fire them while he is still, you know, in quotes, legitimate before the inaugurational date. I know the Q people are excited about this. All I can say is if Trump was legitimate, this would have been something he would have done on day one of his presidency, not at the very end. So,
yeah, just like back last March when he responded to some of the rhetoric that he uses at some of his campaign stops, instead of, you know, being conned into going along with this operation. You know, he'd be a lot stronger footing right now. In fact, everything situation would be a lot healthier. But I don't know to what extent he was bamboozled or part of it. That I don't go to the parties, so I don't know. But nevertheless, you see that Tucker Carlson story about it. He had some documents on Hunter Biden that went missing.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I mean, particularly in light of the prior Hillary Clinton, you know, laptop, all that stuff. This is a new twist on the story, you know, that they had him. I mean, think of how many times over since the first laptop. I mean, how many times have the demonic revelation that will sweep clean all of the Satanists in our government? How many times have we been on the 1 yard line waiting for this to happen, you know? And now we have the idea that, well, we were right there, but gosh darn it, it got stolen. I mean, to me, this is the dog ate the homework.
Aren't there any copies?
Right. Wouldn't she send
it like 10 packages out of that vital?
Yeah, and isn't there some kind of way to get around that? So I think it's just the dog ate the homework. It's a you know, it's a way to create the idea that there is meaning to the election without producing any real evidence that might actually land one of the oligarchs in jail. They do this over and over again. And so, you know, when Hunter Biden's laptop got, you know, brought to our attention, I just thought, nah, there's no chance this is going to mean anything. And in fact, I thought the Carlson story was just ridiculous. And, just sort of underline, you know, my skepticism about the whole process, that these things are just done to manipulate us, to make us believe that there's some reality to this. And, you know, it's just a technique to control us, to make us think there's a reality, a democratic reality taking place.
Well, of course, what we've been subjected to since early this year, February, March is his fear. Of course, that's nothing new. Politics exploits fear all the time. There's the politics of fear. It was H.L. Mencken who said the whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. And that's still, that was back in the 1920s and it's still true today. Richard M. Nixon, people react to fear, not love. They don't teach that in Sunday school, but it's true. So there's the politics of fear. The term politics of fear, denotes when leaders or political candidates use fear as driving, as driving or motivating people, or using as a motivating factor rather for people to get them into to vote for them, vote in a particular way, maybe out to allow increased spending, accept policies they might otherwise oppose, not accept. The whole concept relies on the fact that presenting people with a threat, an alleged threat rather, to their well-being will then elicit a powerful emotional response that they can, that can override reason, skepticism, healthy skepticism, and prevent a critical, irrational assessment of policies, or even to deny reality, as we're seeing right now, with the cult of the mask. Of course, in the United States, political contest. Since 9/11, particularly, one or more candidates have for election, the office have often spoken at length to the threat posed. In this case, was terrorism. Remember, terrorism was everywhere. Now it's the virus. Muslim fundamentalists, Islamofascism, alleged state sponsors of terrorism, the rogue states. This became like Iraq, so it became a pretext for a war. The Bush administration, of course, did this with Iraq. With the assistance of the liberal press, like the New York Times, so much for their right and left dialectic. Iraq, Iran, North Korea, a few other rogue states, and it's just that they formed, remember this whole axis of evil speech, that phrase. So U.S. politicians, will often speak out against these threats or alleged threats, and hope that'll make the viewers, the voters, view them as being tough, capable, in charge. They like that image. So it's I mean, this is political rhetoric that that's employed by all politicians to one extent or another, and we've seen that throughout history. With World War II and the Cold War. I think it was the early days of the Cold War, at least the dawn of the Cold War. The Truman Doctrine. Harry Truman was in the process of starting the Cold War against the Soviet Union, and I think when he discussed this plan with Senator Arthur Vandenberg, he famously told Harry Truman, "Scare the hell out of the American people." And this is where you get the spending going. NSC 68, National Security Council Memorandum 68, which kind of called for this massive government spending to face the threat. You had, what's George Kennan in the long telegram, Mr. X, talking about containment. Containing the Soviet threat, which of course was only created because of the alliance between the United States and the Soviet Union during the Second World War, when they worked together to vanquish Germany. Leaving the power vacuum in Europe was set to created the contours for the Cold War, particularly so the occupation of half the continent by the Soviet Union. And there you got the Iron Curtain, the Warsaw Pact versus NATO, and that kind of showdown for the next 40 years. The whole time you had the Red Scare and communism, these things all based on real and imagined, I guess you could say threats, but highly exaggerated, and ultimately controlled from the top, as the look if you consider the research of Anthony Sutton and what he exposed regarding the Bolsheviks and Wall Street and Hitler and these things. So that all the world wars and the ensuing Cold War was largely set up, if not stage managed. But even before the war, and I think you've done a lot of research on this, was the War of the Worlds broadcast, Orson Welles on the Mercury radio. This was Halloween Eve, 1938. Of course, just isn't too long before the actual outbreak of hostilities of the Second World War. Orson Welles terrified the American people with the Halloween Eve radio broadcast, War of the Worlds. I guess a show showing, treating like a real news event, and of an alien invasion. And supposedly thousands of people were terrified, but I actually thought it was real. As it turned out, this was actually wasn't so much a mistake as it was a psyop that was planned by the Princeton Radio Research Project, funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. I think it was Hadley Cantrell. And who was the other guy?
Well, I mean, Adorno was there. I mean, or,
Paul
pardon?
Lazarsfield, yeah. He was the
Yeah.
director.
But what was interesting is that two of those guys ended up helping to produce the authoritarian personality, and so you know, and then another one of them kind of drifted over toward MK Ultra. I mean, that was very, very important, kind of moment in government development of propaganda techniques, because they could test the reaction of the public to, completely ludicrous story, right? I mean, the idea of Martian invasion. It's interesting. I don't really know to what extent that's real, the reports. There's some contestation about that, about did the public actually panic or did they just make the story
Yes.
that they panicked as a way to help control, just to set
A
it
psyop within a psyop.
a PSYOP within a PSYOP. Who knows? But it was obviously something that the government was producing. So we've had, gee, Tim. We can't get away from living in sort of a, we have a debt-based economic system, but our political system is fear-based. And you mentioned sort of the big themes, and I would just point out if you look at how they used fear of the Hun, World War I, World War II, how Hitler was a boogeyman, he was, and it was they used those concept to dehumanize Germans so that they could genocide them. But that transitioned almost immediately into commie fear, fear of the communists, the godless communists. And that was very hard transition because people had come to think of Uncle Joe as an ally. And yet this just transitioned almost immediately to this, the worldwide communist threat is something to be afraid of, which then moved into the fear of atomic war, right? Where, duck and cover. I was one of those kids under my desk, hoping that Formica would hold up to the thermonuclear blast.
Didn't they actually have like a cartoon character, a turtle?
Duck and cover. Yeah, they used to play that. He died of radiation poisoning. So then, but then you went from the commie terror to the Islamic boogeyman, and it was interesting that that was just such a fast transition. Again, it was like to Uncle Joe was an ally one week, world fiend dictator the next, and then the Islamic terrorist boogeyman just sprang almost right out of perestroika, where you had. One year, the Soviets were threatening to take over, Europe, and Tom Clancy was writing books like Red Dawn, where, we would be fighting the commies, in the streets of Paris and whatnot. And then, almost, immediately that just disappeared, and suddenly you had the Islamic terrorist boogeyman. And then, as you pointed out, as soon as we went to the medical terrorism. I mean, COVID cured terrorism, right?
Yeah,
I
it's
mean,
one thing is
there's no episode. So,
the
and so
previous
what?
threat, the previous th threat gracefully walks off the stage for the
Yeah, I
new
mean that's right.
threat.
It's like,
There's never any overlap.
well, it's because I think the human mind can only take one terrorist propaganda device at a time. If you have, it becomes confusing, and so well, it becomes less effective. So, they flipped. Well, it just overnight to this COVID horror story, but we had been preconditioned, of course. If you look at Hollywood's pandemic movies, and specifically the zombie movies, which we've talked about so often, these are propaganda themes to prepare us to be frightened, just like all of the kind of post-electric fantasy, you know, like Naked and Afraid and Dual Survivor, all of this glorification of a non-electric world for, you know, of how wonderful it is and how we should be accepting it. This is all envisioning, I think, after the when the COVID goes away, what they have in store for us.
Well, if you phase that oil, yes, you're going to have.
Right. So it's
yes, Biden suggested. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to make a lot of sense. So, you know, so we are moved by fear. I mean, it's obvious, and they have learned how to do it. And so we have to make the transition. We really need to do it urgently, because, you know, just as a thought experiment, imagine, you know, that the U.S. blows up. They claim that the COVID is overwhelming Europe, and then that locks down hard. I mean, all that we'll have left as a way to try to achieve any freedom will be what can be seen as a kind of resistance, the type that is written about in France during World War II, during the occupation. So we need to, but that isn't a kind of behavior that's going to come out of people who are afraid of COVID. I mean, if you act like, you know, you were mentioning you ran into an individual actually had a full respirator on. You know,
he was spraying chemicals or something.
Yeah, well, I've seen a couple of those too. This is the most extreme fear-driven individuals. You know, they are, you know, to them, they can just see like Greta Thunberg can see ozone. I mean, these guys can see the coronavirus, you know, escaping from their, you know, compatriots' nose.
What is it about someone, I have to imagine, I see this, that sort of gullibility or insanity, usually in people who are left of center.
Yeah.
In their politics. It isn't to say that obviously people from the right are immune to being, to buying into illusions and propaganda. I'm not suggesting it, but I mean, this particular thing, it's almost like they've exploited the sort of this Trump derangement syndrome, where you rally behind Governor Whitmore or Dr. Fauci. And you hate Trump. You become anti-vax if Donald Trump wants you to take the vaccine.
I mean, it's sort of antithetical. I mean, like, why can't the Republicans be the mask wearing? I mean, I guess you can kind of think maybe independence might be one of the themes or something. Mm-hmm. But here in California, you can identify people politically just by how many masks and respirators they have on.
Yes.
I mean, the far left is just like they're in hazmat suits.
Is it because that they're further removed from reality, like economic reality? And
I'm just wondering what's your explanation, because here the Republicans are more sensible. I mean, they're much more. These are general concepts, but that's how it's kind of playing out here. Why is that?
It's an interesting, you know, sort of psychopolitical analysis, mass psychology. I think obviously that the Trump dynamic here is although Trump's politics are, if you look at it historically, they're fairly conventional. What do you even call them? Conservative? Yet he's identified as being this, you know, right-wing fascist, you know, and it's all based on a pure emotion, particularly with the liberal whites. You know, in fact, Trump's more hated by liberal whites than he is by like blacks or Latinos. So it's strange. It's sort of a class thing. If you go into affluent neighborhoods, you'll see that. It's something that I think the people who started this operation, I think, predicted the reaction. So they now it's Trump versus Fauci, you know, sort of in their minds. And Trump's anti-science, Fauci's pro-science, even though Fauci says you should wear a mask for symbolic reasons. So Fauci's the witch doctor, but that's science. And you see the signs, you know, I believe in science. It's like, you know, okay, fine. You know, it's like saying science is true. Well, you know, you can say, well, so is religion, but who's religion? So who's science? You know, it's just not really well thought out. And you know, although science may be its pure form may be true, it doesn't mean that it's immune for being abused, being politicized, and people can invoke science to get grant money and also to gain political powers. We obviously see. So it's one of these, you know, stupid, superficial bumper sticker type of things. I think they're making a profound statement. Really, they're just confusing the matter. It's odd. You know, it's the type, almost like the type of person who plasters his car with bumper stickers are usually liberal, right? So it's an
Yeah,
aesthetic
almost
thing.
always in California.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
They
that
want
I
to
think
just
that's
want
been
to
interesting.
wear it on their sleeve, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so it's really very clear cut. I've actually kind of questioned people on the street when I see someone in a extraordinary, kind of near hazmat suit things. I always ask them, like, what do you think about,
Hey,
the
so
politics?
yeah, where are you tending bees? Where
Yeah, right. Yeah.
you?
So it's, yeah. Well, anyway, so fear is has been studied, and they really have got us, figured out in this regard. They've used it. Well, you can just see in this little structure I gave, like that's 100 years, from like Bernays and the Hun and who was a gorilla in an outfit carrying a blonde shoulder to Fauci's kind of weird pandemic nonsense. I mean, this is it's been 100 years of terror. I think Hollywood has been moving us to a fear-based psychology as well. I mean, just think of all the horror films. There's no particular reason. In fact, I would say that the horror film should be outlawed. I mean, why in the world do you want to terrorize children, let alone adults? But I mean, children. I mean, they force-fed all of the boomer, my generation, all these horror films. I mean, you look at movies like Halloween and this stuff. I mean, they're just degenerate. Now, they say, well, people like the experience of terror. It's thrilling. Well, I think we got along with it just fine in the 19th, without it just fine in the 19th century, right?
Well, we got
I
along
mean,
fine with just fine without movies, didn't we?
yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't recall like a lot of, I've been through some like diaries from the night. I can't recall one saying, gee, I'm like feel like abused because there's no like zombies in my neighborhood. I mean, it's just, so they once they got the production code destroyed, they could start the really grisly horror stuff. They'd already had some. They were slipping through, like the Frankenstein, which is a Masonic, Mary Shelley. I mean, this is, she's. These are symbolic, to the Masonic controllers. But anyway, so they got this stuff going, and now you really wonder. I mean, gee, the minds of the young people. I mean, you have the pornography, the horror stories, and then you have the all of these World of Warcraft stuff. I mean, this is really just a nonstop assault on their soul, just from when they wake up to when they go to bed. It's just incredible. I mean, so when we lost control of the media, if you look at the time that that was taking place, you can see that was really right as they were, the authoritarian personality had talked about Eros being, the central conditioning element to move us, away from ethnicity and into this brave new world setup. So it was hand in hand with Hollywood. In fact, just as an aside, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but Adorno and Horkheimer, after they got done with the authoritarian personality, you know where they went? They lived in the Pacific Palisades, which is a, Tony residential area and just outside of show business, and they tried to sell screenplays. So I mean, it's just a completely a logical transition from the authoritarian personality to, the movies. But so this is, what we've been dealing with. I mean, we have been terrorized, and of course, with the pornography, we've been separated. Our family units have been wrecked, and now when the medical slave state is being onset, we're standing alone. And so we need to quickly, recognize our plight and start thinking as we might as like a resistance, unafraid, fighting back, which I think at this stage would mean organizing, trying to think about, well, who can you count on if you're going to resist? And I think, Tim, if it gets to the point where you start seeing the food lines, these things start breaking down, what do you have to lose at that point, right? You can see the future is starvation. If you get to that point where you're sure that this is, where we're moving, may as well fight. And if you're gonna fight, don't fight alone. Fight is,
Well,
try to organize.
at the bottom line, this is economic warfare because the all the restrictions that businesses are confronted with, the pressure they're under, the financial pressure, the bankruptcies, this is the ground game for the Great Reset, of course. And so you could look at whether it's the mayor or governor, local government, they're implementing this stuff. They're implementing it for the folks at the at the World Economic Forum, who are predicting a great economic reset. And think about what that entails. It means the complete reordering of the economic system, of social life, and it requires the lockdowns, atomization of society, the immiseration and spreading of poverty. And ironically, they say, how this pandemic has created an opportunity for this great reset. They're not asking the people whether they want it. They're imposing it, and they presume to do that. And the iron, of course, it's what's amazing is as they announce this great reset, and now it's being openly talked about, it's not being debated by any politician. It just as if this is above and beyond them. Well, this is that's the state of play. That's where the big game is. But whenever if you have a mayor or a governor or a police chief enforcing this stuff, they're the shock troops for this cabal at Davos. And all the fear, and it's being coordinated. This is the like we talked about it last week. How a setting like Davos, the World Forum, this is where something like this is where a global conspiracy is hatched and implemented, and it's all there. This is where everyone meets and discusses this thing,
Sure, and we can see what the brave world is going to be like because they've already shown us. I mean, I think Christmas parties don't look like they're going to be very popular, right? In
I mean, they're trying to ban Christmas parties. I mean, talk about the war on Christmas. You've always heard about the not allowing a creche a creche because it violates separation of church and state. These things, banning religious
the White
symbols
House
in public
lawn.
buildings. These things. Well, no, now they're just they're not letting be. They're restricting church capacity, so not many people can go. So basically, I don't know. Usually Christmas is packed because you have people only go on Christmas on Christmas and Easter. Now the church can't even have that anymore, and because how are you
Well,
gonna have Christmas
how about
mass?
being able to go out of your house for 1 hour a day?
Yes, and it's all leading to that. There was a interesting piece that John Rappaport wrote this week, "The Virus Story: Breaking the Chains of Medical Civilization." I thought just because this actually blends well with what we're talking about right now. He writes, in the same way the CIA invented foreign enemies, which required us to go to war, there are some people who have invented stories of fearful germs that demand medical treatment and prevention. The storytellers know that among the public, many people want the germ, need it, even love it. Yes, love it. After enough conditioning has helped them along with along the path of surrender, the covert operation aims to engulf all civilization in a preposterous and fake medical nightmare. The operation has its roots in modifying citizens to accept medical dictates. There are many kinds of such dictates, and it would take volumes to explore them all. Here I present a set of numbers from the U.S. National Health Statistic, a division of the CDC covering the year 2018. Percent of adults who had contact with a healthcare professional, 84.3%. Percent of children who had contact with a healthcare professional, 93.6%. Number of physician office visits in 2016, 883.7 million. Here's another related estimate. According to the U.S. National Alliance on Mental Illness, in a recent year, more than 25% of college students have been diagnosed or treated by a professional for a mental health condition. Try to grasp how this unprecedented rate of exposure to doctors shapes the minds of Americans. Appointments, tests, diagnoses, advice, orders, prescriptions, drugs, and vaccines, follow-ups, referrals to specialists. These factors alone, never mind the toxic effects of treatments or wall-to-wall medical ads and other propaganda, add up to a medical civilization. Given this reality, how do we think people are going to respond when they are told there is a pandemic and they must follow orders? After 100 years of Rockefeller medicine, new normal, we've been living under the new normal for a long time. How many drug prescriptions do you think are written in the U.S. every year? According to the Statistica.com, it is estimated that in 2019, 4.38 billion retail prescriptions will be filled throughout the United States. Many, many people accept the ubiquitous medical civilization without thought or pause. It's just the way things are. Pretended pandemics are an arm of medical civilization, but now we've reached a point where the medical is a gateway into a technocratic brave new world. This attempted transition is launched from the foundations of lifelong conditioning of the public to doctors and everything those doctors order and represent. Mind control par excellence. Two important groups of people, politicians and journalists, are operating from the bias in their decisions because they, too, have been trained to place themselves under the care of doctors on an ongoing basis. Are they going to rip out that hard wiring of their own experience when the rubber meets the road, when they're faced with professional questions about medical credibility? No. They're going to side with the CDC and WHO and university experts. What I'm describing in this article goes beyond the acceptance of science as the dominant paradigm. This conditioning is deeply personal and deeply seated in the minds of people who have been trudging along the bleak path of medical care since early childhood, medical care for every so-called symptom. I've spent many hours exposing the actual death and maiming effects of medicines on the population. Again, here I'm simply discussing the up-close connection between eternal patient and doctor. In that sense, telling a dedicated person to take off his mask is telling him to destroy what he believes is a deep lifeline, without which he might well drown. Medical civilization's leaders want us to bow down to the germ. They want us to drool like Pavlov's dogs. When they ring the bell signaling the presence of a new virus, our anticipated food in this case is supposed to be treatment and containment measures. So I thought that was.
No, actually, you know, I read John's column, and it's very timely to digress into a personal anecdote. So last week, I had a cyst removed from my neck because it was incredibly unsightly. It was really almost like a golf ball. It was ancient and had gotten really large. So, you know, when I was just again to double digress, you know, what was Kurt Vonnegut? He said he didn't do any public appearances after he was like 75. He said because he says the animal I most closely resembled was an iguana. And so this is what happens in your 70. You just wart up, you know, and this is even in healthy people. So it's pretty miserable, but to look at, not so much to experience, but. Anyway, so I had this thing, and it was pressing, and if I rubbed it or something, bumped it, it pressed against a nerve, and it was driving me nuts. So I was going to take it out, and I looked at, you know, like I kind of studied a little bit before I went in. I know the doctor; he's just kind of a personal friend, someone I know. And I said, "Look, I don't want to use any anesthesia." He goes, "No, I have to use it." I go, "No, I don't want any." I had to sign a release form. To have it cut out without any, I don't want any drugs, you know, for anesthesia. And then I said, you know, I said, Matt, I told him, I don't want any pain pills either. And frankly, you can keep the antibiotics. And he just absolutely couldn't believe it. I said, nah, I'm not interested. And that was like a week ago, Tuesday. And I got the stitches out yesterday and I'm just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hurt, really, it hurt a little bit. But this is because I have just come to the, you know, the position that John kind of alludes to in his article, that the whole Rockefeller medicine thing is rotten to the core. It's just totally rotten. So I'm just not interested in any of the chemicals. I mean, I'm sure for some things, you know, like a broken arm, and I'm not even sure I would use like. I mean, I'd have to, if I got there, I'd find out. But I don't want the drugs. I don't want the chemicals. I think there's always a side effect. And if you can, you know, just deal with a little bit of pain, you know, some people can't, but if you can, why would you bother with these things? And then, of course, with the antibiotics and, you know, and the pain pills, stuff, just forget all that stuff. So I thought the article was good. And this is critical to understand right now because it's part of the fear. I mean, We're talking about fear, and this, of course, is just days before Halloween, the fear-based, national holiday with all of the when the zombies come out. And it is a time when all of us have to look into ourselves and ask ourselves, well, is fear driving my behavior in my mind? Mm-hmm. Because we are being locked down. We're not going to get let out. We are being enslaved, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to want to keep us as pets. So basically, this is genocide. So now the question is what are we going to do? And if you are afraid, if you're one of the people who wants to wear their respirator to bed, you're not going to be able to be very useful in the resistance, are you? Right. We need bold people who are on the other side of fear and have are experiencing anger in a way that makes them intense and clear-minded. Because when you think about the jackbooted thugs of dictatorship showing up at your Christmas party, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? You can't ad hoc this moment. We have to forget that. We can't just respond with anger. Then they'll just shoot us. Have to plan. You have to have asymmetrical goals, right? Think about the resistance in Europe during World War II. I mean, I don't know what else to tell anyone at this point. What else can we really say? There's no, almost no analysis that needs to be done. When they show up at your Christmas party with submachine guns, I mean, this is not really a legitimate government. This is an occupying force, so we've got to fight back, and we have to organize that fight back.
And it really just they rely so much on just like defaulting to compliance, because even we show how where people like they actually refuse to pay the fine and they prevail in court.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So what that means is all the fines issued, all that are empty threats. Don't pay them and doing your business. A friend of mine sent me a picture of a restaurant in D.C. having all these restrictions. You have to put the mask on in between biting your food or something, or if you step away from your table, you have to provide contact tracing information, which I was like, no, I'm not going to do that, or I just wouldn't write very clearly. But the business that they had to do that, or they were threatened with closure, or being fined actually. And I said, well, that's funny. And then they said that their business is way down and they're going to go bankrupt if they keep it up, if they keep these restrictions up. So the option for the business owner is follow the rules and go bankrupt, or don't follow the rules and be fined and then be shut down by the city government. And I said, well, at least if you challenge it legally, you have a chance in court. Otherwise, if you do follow the rules, you have no chance. So that you might as well,
and
fight
you,
back.
I mean, it's like, and you had 100 restaurants.
They're all, yes, yeah.
Then think of what, and you found one judge that would go along with the idea that this is just illegitimate. Well, you this is something they can overcome with brute force. But you think of what you've done to fight back, because this could embolden other kinds of businesses. I have been fighting this.
That lawsuit in Ohio, where, I think they're spreading all over the country, Tom Renz's lawsuit, where he's legally challenging the factual basis for an emergency. Where's your data? Okay.
Exactly.
The lawsuit, you don't have the data. Because then it's a false claim. You don't have sound data to declare said emergency. And that's a crime in of itself, by the way. Declaring false emergencies, it's malfeasance and fraud. That's just one another angle, but that's a way of resisting. You use the resources while you have it. A lot of lawyers out there,
a lot of them out of work right now because the lockdown is slowing things down. So yeah, they should be, available to help, these kinds of cases. This is one of the reasons why I'm so afraid about next week. I'm really worried that you have a the election is contested. No one concedes. They have, of course, Antifa available, and then martial law and the whole thing. Who knows how far they could take it. right now, we can use this time to, find our best approach to like how we're going to behave after, after the election. So let's all agree to organize,
There was a apparently that lawsuit, Tom Renz's lawsuit in Ohio, Stand Up Ohio's lawsuit against Governor DeWine, Peter Bregan, the psychiatrist,
yeah,
is apparently helping that. He's written some, I guess, some briefs, expert briefs they're submitting to the court about Dr. Fauci, his corrupt dealings, and also just the effects of the lockdown.
One thing that kind of worries me is that I think that the lawsuits are, telling. I think that they can start to have influence. I also think that the independent media is making progress. You look at the skepticism about the coming vaccine. And so all of this makes me think that they are going to go forward hard-edged if they get the opportunity to do so. I saw the guy who in Pawn Stars, Rick Harrison. He's just this bald-headed curmudgeon. Have you ever watched?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a well-known guy. I don't.
He's
know
in Las Vegas or something.
He's in Las Vegas. But a listener sent me this clip where they have him getting up there and talking to the public about the dangers of conspiracy theories. Seriously. It was an amazing thing.
Maybe if the host of Pawn Stars is
right. I mean, but the idea that they would get that far into the weeds and they're trying to get every little, piece of trust and authority in play here, that suggests to me that they're not that confident in the propaganda working. I mean, you wouldn't be bringing this Rick Harrison clown out to, pump up the dangers of conspiracy theories if you actually had the thing under control. So I would think that kind of suggests that they may, just like I feel like COVID may have been forced because there was just too many people starting to catch on, and they just thought that, well, timing wise, we have to go now. So hopefully that I'm wrong, but if things get ugly next week, I think you and I can at least, I think we can with honesty say, we gave advice that was meaningful and useful,
There's people think if you suggest that public health officials, the government, may be exaggerating threat to induce fear to induce compliance among the public or support for policy or engaging in conspiracy theory. But public health and fear, actually fear is a strategy. It's an acknowledged strategy in public health policies, meaning if you read the academic papers, the policy papers, they talk about exploiting public fears in order to bring about compliance or acceptance of policies. So it is established. It is fear appeal, as it's referred to, is a big part of public health.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, but I think it was a GLADEX. It was where they actually brought out the concept of dark winter.
Mm-hmm.
And if memory serves, and I think it does, that actually had part. It was a scenario. In other words, GLADEX was like Event 201. It was just a war game concept where they brought in everybody and just kind of figured out how they're going to behave if this biological epidemic swept across. And I say it was smallpox. But part of it, the reason I bring this up is that part of it was in their scenario, they had to go out and arrest the conspiracy theorists because they were messing up with the ability of the American people to be clear-minded about smallpox. And so I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
And
so this is the infodemic Event 201 talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, and they also, so it's, conspiracy theorists get a special place of honor in these game theories, because we're the ones they're going to go out and wipe out first because you can't have anyone interfering with the public's clear thinking, can you?
And then they took this absurd position with social media, where any I guess any postings on YouTube or something that gave information or a point of view that was contrary to the dictates of the CDC, would be pulled or flagged. And despite the fact the CDC, from one day to another, contradicts itself, and also the fact that the CDC, along with the World Health Organization, has been caught in any number of scandals, false testing, of fudging results about the MMR and autism. The World Health Organization was caught in that scandal with the swine flu epidemic, where they faked a pandemic so they could sell $18 billion worth of a vaccine that didn't work and harmed thousands of people they didn't need to take,
Yeah, it's just ham-handed censorship of alternative opinions. It's not even, plausible as something that's medically reasonable. So, and of course, the First Amendment is in the rearview mirror at this point. So, we've had a good run with the internet. It'll be interesting to see, how it functions going forward. But it is my opinion that this is a genie. The independent media has had a chance now for 20 years, really, to have effect, and it has had an effect everywhere, every country. I mean, I was getting, emails this week from Japan, hard realists, thinking about Masonic control of their country, so it's everywhere. They will have a hard time extinguishing it. We'll see how it plays out. I mean,
Well,
let's.
look, if you look at fear, you've had this pushing of the cases, testing cases as they test, cases go up because those positive tests, but the fatality rate is plummeted. Isn't that good news? So why isn't that touted? Why isn't that on headlines?
Yeah, because it's not fearful.
And why aren't politicians tagging that as, at least you think they could, tout that as success? Because the right now success and is not on the agenda. It's fear, 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 because fear is there to induce compliance to accept, people's enslavement through
Yeah.
medical tyranny, so they can bring about this great reset that they have planned, or they openly talk about. And if you doubt that, go to the World Economic Forum. It exists. It's not a conspiracy theory. And if you don't think that a gathering of the world's wealthiest people, along with politicians, leaders of journalism and academia and science, that isn't something you should take notice of, or the decisions there aren't consequential, fine. But it does matter. And they have a video of the Great Reset, and they produce things like the year 2030, you don't own anything and you'll love
Yeah, that's right. Thanks a
it.
lot for
So they're
that.
doing, it's like it's in your face. Their fangs and claws are bared. They're right on top of you now, and you're like ignoring it. It's something can't. It's so obvious now. It's just.
Well, humans are very simple in one sense, in that it's either fight or flight. That's how the emotional current runs one way or the other. And they've done everything possible. From the zombie films to, modern feminism. I mean, they have done everything to move us toward flight, right? That we can't come out of our houses. It's too scary. We can't breathe on one another. We'll kill each other. I mean, so they have us pinned with this the flight. That they've just been conditioning us. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, if you look back to the authoritarian personality, and then the hippie who was, developed out of that. That was part of the, how culture started to move. The authoritarian personality, the individual who is cleared by all of these different tests, that is someone who couldn't fight. No way, right? I mean, it's all been taken away from them. All of the ability to have anger and fight has been somehow very cleverly removed as, part of the healthy, unneurotic personality. And then when you look at the hippie, the pacifist, again, it's putting into play psychological structures that are just very easy to enslave, because there's no fight back. And so now we got here, where they felt confident they could actually lock down the world, and you know, we will just go willingly into the safety of the FEMA camp where the food is and the vaccines, and then that'll be the end of us. But I think that they're going to have a hard time with that. I do think that just judging by, that small, sample that I can see, that it's everywhere. The resistance is really going to be everywhere. And I think that as it moves into more hunger, they're really going to have to, they'll be facing uprisings everywhere throughout the entire world. And the uprising will become more coordinated. In Europe, they're already starting to coordinate the protests. And in last weekend, they had a, like a organized protest of, I think, like 20 countries, 15 countries. RFK Jr. was involved with it. And in a couple of them, in Poland and in Italy, the protests got really spicy.
Yeah, I saw that where they were.
People fought back.
Yeah.
So what we need are protests in every city, and where people are really using the techniques of resistance, asymmetrical planning. Right now it's still we're in the phase where all you do is you walk up and take a punch in the head from the cop. But and then in some cases they actually they were more coherently aggressive. In Italy, I saw them throwing like Molotov cocktail type stuff, So that's promising, I suppose. But we're this next year, Tim, is going to be like you say, we're living in interesting times. We'll see how we get through it. But the main thing is we have to, I mean, just as a general philosophy, we have to move out of flight and fear and into anger and fight.
And
I mean,
there's also realizing there's nothing objective about the conditions that require these events to unfold the way they do. They're being imposed upon us.
yes,
You know, and so they're
absolutely.
individuals, they have addresses, names, zip codes, they're identifiable,
Yeah.
organizational identifiable. Same with the politicians. This is why, again, with the evidence we have before us, there's clearly grounds for some sort of investigation, some sort of convening or impaneling a grand jury to investigate the malfeasance, high crimes, and misdemeanors of various governors, mayors, and officials, public officials, and also the oligarchs and the organization, NGOs and foundations that are involved in this conspiracy. Of course, that would also involve something like the World Health Organization, the CDC, and also the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Imperial College of London, the various institutes
New
that are
York
New
Times,
York Times, and
CNN.
all this. This is a criminal enterprise. A
Yeah, I mean, it's all
conspiracy.
one big criminal
Yeah,
enterprise.
and just because you own a publication doesn't mean you're immune to prosecution. And again, theoretically, the agency is there. You just need someone in the political authority to do this. It could be done at the state level. It'd be nice if, again, if the Justice Department or the FBI would do something like that. That is their job. But of course, these things, these institutions are so compromised at this point. Put much faith in that. But there are all laws in the books to deal with this stuff. There's specific laws against declaring fake emergencies, and fraud, and misallocating of funds, and not to mention, in fact, the violations of the Constitution. The 14th Amendment, the First Amendment, which should carry penalties, especially for the very politicians that presume to rule over us, that are entrusted with powers, and then they violate the very oaths of office and the very charter of their office they violate.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's absolutely well said, and I agree 100%. We also have to anticipate the possibility that they will end democracy because they have to protect us from encountering one another in the voting booths.
Well, they're effectively doing that because what supports democracy or the democratic functions within our system are things like the First Amendment, the free exercise of religion, the right to free assembly, to engage in commerce and communicate, and to this type of social intercourse, which really enlivens the system, or whatever validity or legitimacy it has. It's because of that. And if you deprive the system, deprive us of that, the mere act of voting is meaningless.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just theorizing about
As meaningless as it was in the Soviet Union, you know. They
yeah,
voted
I
in the
mean, I'm
Soviet
just
Union too.
right. Oddly enough, I woke up one morning and I was in a zombie film that was set in the Soviet Union. I mean, this is kind of what the, the
Well, that's what
corona.
they're asking. When de Blasio asks that you don't leave the state, and when he's asking, next thing that what's coming next is an order, a quarantine. They presume the quarantine people who aren't even ill, aren't signed, but they presume the quarantine based on a BS test that they say, which everyone it's advertised as not being conclusive or being reliable. But when they talk about like when people in England or people in Australia or New Zealand are restricted to 5 to 10 kilometers, that's you're servitizing the system. You're creating internal passports. There are discussion of that. This is what health pass, these things are all about. It's internal passports, constant testing. That in itself is ridiculous because testing itself is ridiculous because day to day you can be exposed. Theoretically, under
Yeah,
their
this is
narrative.
absurd. I mean, these things are not even close to being medically coherent. It is slave training. It's just slave training and raw enslavement. In the case, I mean, we saw where it all goes. I mean, this is incrementalism. Everyone will go in fits and starts, but they're locking us down now again in Wales. France is getting locked down hard right now. They're trying to relock down all of Europe, even though the actual mortality is ludicrously small, and there's just this casedemic, so there's no real, reason for it. It's just enslavement, and we can see what the enslavement will look like because of the experiment that they ran in Melbourne, where they had people locked down for months when they could only go out 1 hour a day. I mean,
Think about that, yeah.
That's where it goes. And this was in an area, 5 million people plus, where I think the most they ever had like in a week was like 20 or 30 fatalities. And it was just nothing. And so it was just a case-driven lockdown with a and well per, you know like seemingly insane a premier dictator, but who was obviously just a Masonic operative who was conducting an experiment on his populations that they could study so they could see if, what exactly to expect when they did this on a worldwide basis.
Yep, I saw a sign the other day at church that said, "Love thy neighbor, wear a mask, get a flu shot."
Yeah, you'll be as happy as you can be, right? And then come out of your house 1 hour a day. But, what is so maddening to me is when I talk to people about this is they don't see how obvious the path to starvation is, because we don't have a functioning economy in the world right now. It's not working normally, and ultimately this will end up with the systems breaking down. You're not going to have electricity. You're not going to have food. I mean, these things, people get vis-a-vis long and complicated economic chains, and these systems are broken, right? They're broken. So in the United States, we can create magic dollars for a while. People are paying attention to them. They still respect it, but that won't last forever.
No.
And now, what are you going to do? And in any case, no amount of dollars can buy food if there's none there. So, it's maddening that the rebellion is taking this long, but I think that events of the next month or so will quicken the process. I think in a couple months, Tim, I know, it's easy to make grandiose predictions, but I really do believe that we're going to get a kind of a tipping point here pretty quick where, in one 30-day period, about 5 or 10% of the population will suddenly wake up, and they'll realize that the government is a secret society that's intent on genocide. And at that point, when you have more bodies, you can really start asymmetrical protests, asymmetrical resistance.
Yeah. And Christopher, it says you do have, so many counterexamples. Like even in the United States, you have North Carolina, which is semi-locked down, South Carolina, which is virtually no restrictions. And yet in South Carolina, right across the border, people aren't dropping dead. And there's a lot of cross traffic between South Carolina and North Carolina. So if there's anything really out there, something as deadly as they claim, you'd see differences like in states like South Dakota or South Carolina or Florida. Yeah, there
And
was a look at Sweden. There's an interesting
look
tweet
at
I
Sweden.
saw. This is sweet, regarding Sweden, and there's a tweet that was sent to me. It says, "We have reached a peak in inversion where the only place not suffering from Stockholm syndrome is Stockholm."
That's very witty.
It was a Tony Heller, as
Well,
Twitter's.
very good for him. I mean, the thing is that in Wales you can't buy children's clothes. And in France, you can't sit at a sidewalk cafe by yourself drinking a beer. And this is because of the boogeyman virus. While in Sweden, which had none of these restrictions, they now are averaging one fatality a day, one, and have for like a month. So this it puts the lie to all of the government claims about the efficacy of the lockdown, right? It just flat out, Sweden is not a small, you're talking over 10 million people. They are not experiencing this mystical virus. So there is no rationale any longer that's viable. When they scared us with the horror porn in, March and February, okay, could have, remember it was, they had the pictures that we talked yesterday about all the Chinese guys like who had died in the street, and they couldn't even get into the hospital, the virus is just wiping them out. Okay, so, and then there was all the rumors, well, it was a biological weapon that escaped from a lab, Okay, horror porn, everyone is frightened. Well, but not now, right? I mean, everyone can see what the thing is. It's nothing. It doesn't really exist as a lethal germ. So the lockdown is purely, enslavement. It's purely the political class, the secret society that has slithered in and controls all of the political structures. It's revealing itself. It's showing us who these people really are. We know now our condition. We know now what we're experiencing. We know how, Tim, why our lives are so difficult because, the fear, I mean, it's not just, the zombie films and, all of the different ways, but the whole economic structure is fearful, right? When you have central banks, it's part of, like everyone is afraid of the future.
No, it's economic shock doctrine. It's disaster
Yeah, it's
capitalism.
we've
Set
been
up to
suffering
fail every five,
the
six
whole Western
years.
world. We've been suffering from economic shock doctrine, where there's these, terrible crises and, and you can't have a family because there just isn't enough money somehow. The houses, all of these things are just artificial. The whole world we live in is constructed to make us frightened, to keep us instead of fight to flight. And so we are flight, we run away. But that didn't work. There's no safe place to run to. We gotta just start to make the transition to fight. And how we fight back. I mean, you gave some really good suggestions. Obviously, the legal system is the first thing. Absolutely the first thing. If it's still functioning, we use it. But we also have to be prepared that the illegitimacy of the lockdown will expand and that there will be no legitimate political system that we can plug into. And at that point, we have the right of self-defense.
Well, unfortunately, the oligarchs that are ultimately, imposing this on us, they're not going to back down unless they're mortally threatened,
Exactly.
and they're creating a situation of bloodshed, not the people. When they have cops breaking up Christmas parties, preventing people from going to church, they're the ones creating the conditions for that. But unfortunately, they're going to have to feel like they're actually physically threatened. I mean, like, what I mean, that is, the create a political situation where someone like a Gates faces arrest for his part in this conspiracy. Same with Soros and anyone who's involved running his organizations. Assets are seized and these things. This isn't just fantasy. This can be done if there's a wide public acknowledgement or acceptance of this conspiracy, which they openly admit, pretty much openly admit. I mean, you can infer it, but like you said, with something like the Great Reset, where there someone like
Sure.
Klaus Schwab is talking about, you know, he talks about the Great Reset, but the Great Reset, the reality of that is genocide, because it has to be based on their terms.
Yeah, Klaus Schwab, I got a bunch of comments about him. They from Germany, and they call him the German that no German has ever heard of. They think he's just a complete, lifetime actor fake. Who knows? But I thought that was kind of witty, he's German, except no German has ever heard of him or met him. So, Tim, this is exciting. Will there be another powers and principalities? Time will
Only
tell.
time will
I
tell,
hope
yeah.
so. I certainly hope so. I hope, I mean, let's hope that the week is calm. But we'll see if electricity is still here, or if we're suddenly in the and naked and afraid, I mean, it's going to be an interesting week. I honestly don't anticipate that. I think there could be, riots, and but I think we'll definitely be back in a week. I mean, I think that they want to do more mind control than I think physical attacks right now. We'll see though. I mean, this is we're in uncharted territory about going forward,
So, okay, Joe, enjoy the
Hey,
weekend.
Tim.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you, buddy.
So,
We'll talk, huh?
take it easy. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.